voting mathematicians here.
Good morning. Calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 8:35 a.m. This Saturday morning. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Cox?
Here.
Representative
Ledoux? Here.
Representative
Burke?
Yep.
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Cox?
I thought I heard that already.
Say here. Yes. I think it was cop she called it.
Yeah.
It's called cop instead of cop.
Cop,
something.
Josephson, Representative
Kamau.
Here.
Chair Franklin.
Here. And I guess technically we're just stating attendance as this is the resumption of Thursday's meeting. So today we have three amendments, technical amendments, that are being considered. They are amendments number one, amendments number two, and amendment number four. And the corresponding work order numbers for amendment number one is J.1, which was moved and then withdrawn on Thursday's meeting. Amendment number two is J.2, which was also moved and also withdrawn on Thursday's meeting. And amendment number three, which related to fees for a real ID compliant ID, was adopted. So amendment number four is J.6. And members have these amendments and these work order. And these amendments are also on basis. And today, the sort of scope of business is the consideration of these three technical amendments. Many thanks to Leslie Rydell, who and Mike Stinker, for that matter, with the Department of Law, who reviewed these amendments and other aspects of the current CS yesterday at great length. And so at this time, Madam Chair, is there a motion to move
amendment number one?
I will object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Magdans and or Mr. Lardy, would you come forward and speak to amendment number one? And put yourself on the record, of course.
For the record, Reed Magdans, staff to Chair Kreis-Tompkins.
Stephanie Gilardi, Chair, staff to Rep. Kreis-Tompkins.
And Mr. Magdans and Ms. Gilardi, could you describe amendment number one?
Yes, this amendment was recommended by the legal department. The current CS only states that the application for an identification card includes on the application information that differentiates the compliant and the non-compliant card, but it does not place a duty on the department to include that information on the application. So legal suggested that change, placing the duty on the department to include the information.
Are there any questions from the members? I should also note for each of these amendments, I'm hoping for Deputy Commissioner Rydell to also speak to them also if there are questions, but any questions from members? Representative Birch.
So, through the chair, so am I to understand, I mean, it appears that, so it makes it real clear so the applicant knows whether they're getting a card that's just an ID card that'll permit them to drive and whatnot, but it won't necessarily permit them access to the federal facilities or, TSA and so forth. It's just a bright line there, if you will, at the application point.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, that is correct. And the amendment also states that it's the department's duty to provide that information.
Right. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions on amendment number one?
I just got a comment.
Mr. Chair.
Talk.
Yeah, and I don't know what is actually going to be disclosed information, but I think it is erroneous to mention that you won't be able to fly without a real ID. I made it very clear that you can fly, and I think that when we bring back Hasbrook, when we get a chance to finish with our questions with him, that I think he'll be able to reveal that he's seen court documents to where the signs at the airport, even Homeland Security, said that, those are erroneous signs. So I don't know what's going to be disclosed on this, but I don't want people to fear that they're not going to be able to travel unless they get a real ID card.
Those comments noted. Thank you, Representative Tuck. Further questions on amendment number one? Representative Wolf?
Well, just to follow up on that, comment from Representative Tuck, is it my understanding, and correct me, and that once this bill, once Real ID gets fully enacted, it will actually be required to have a federally recognized ID. Isn't that the purpose of what we're doing?
And I think at this time I might want to limit comments and questions to specifically Amendment Number 1. Maybe these broader comments, when we get back to the bill as a whole, we can discuss further there, although being cognizant of the timeline. But any further questions or comments specifically pertaining to Amendment Number 1?
Question for you.
Representative Knopp.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, I would have a question for Leslie Riedel in regards to, and I only ask that question right now. It's not directly related to the amendment, but it might, I don't know if it's something we want to include on it. I'm curious about the documentation that will be required now when a new applicant comes in to get the optional license versus the compliant license. What type of documentation is going to be required for each one? And I must only ask in that to see if it fits within the scope of this amendment. So.
Sure. Through the chair, this is Leslie Riedel, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration, and Representative Knopp. Sorry. Not enough coffee. We will write our regulations. We haven't yet, and obviously based on what passes in the bill. We do not have any reason to not try to be very clear with our customers. We try to provide as much information all the time when they come in. We don't want them to be confused. We don't want them to get a license or an ID that doesn't let them get where they want to go. And so we want to give them every choice that they have and everything that we possibly can give them. So I don't have it exactly right now, if that helps.
Can you just tell me today what do they have to submit to get a driver's license?
Oh, it's through the chair. They have certain things in ID that they have to bring in. I have to look up the list here. And that won't change when this happens. So the same ID, birth certificate, social security proof, or your passport would suffice to show us who you are. It's just what we will check on once you bring in your ID. So none of that changes. And then the regulations about what we'll tell them what the two different IDs mean will be new.
Could just follow up one more time, sir? No, I won't delay this. I promise it's not my intent. So if you have to supply a birth certificate or a passport now, I'm just in my mind trying to comprehend what additional documentation may be required. I mean, they seem to be the two that's relied on, birth certificate. So it goes to Mr. Representative Wool's question about verification. So it could be the same document, but you just take a separate process for verification of those documents. Would that be fair to say?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, exactly. It's the same documents. We just check them out more thoroughly when you bring them in. Nothing new is required.
Thank you.
Further comments, questions on Amendment Number 1, J.1? Seeing none, I will remove my objection to the motion to adopt Amendment Number 1. Is there further objection to Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, Amendment Number 1, Work Order J.1 is adopted. Madam Chair, an amendment or entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Amendment Number 2.
And I will object for purposes of discussion to the motion to adopt Amendment Number 2, which is Work Order Number J.2. Mr. Magdans and Ms. Gilardi, please.
Stephanie Gilardi, staff to Rep. Chris Tompkins. Amendment Number 2 deletes the specific mention of the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, or AMVA. This change was also proposed by the legal department. They said that because the CS specifies that if the department conveys, distributes, or communicates data to a database, index, pointer system, or any other system managed by an entity other than the department, the department may not convey, and then there is a list of things they may not convey. They said it was not necessary to include a specific mention of AMVA because that is covered by an entity other than the department.
Thank you. Any questions on amendment number 2? Seeing none, I will remove my...
Go ahead. You can remove yours, yes, sir.
I'll remove my objection to the motion to adopt amendment number 2.
And then I will object to the...
Representative Knopp objects. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it does... it just goes right back to the same conversation we had at the last meeting in regards to this. It's a recommendation, but because we are a member and it really did no harm in leaving the language in there, I think we concluded at the last meeting. And although I agree with the language that was read, it doesn't mean at some point in the future, because we are a member, that it may prevent us from that organization from doing this, you know, conveying that management of these. I'm going to not object to this amendment.
Representative Tuck.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And additionally, this is the only organization that anyone can ever be compliant with. I'll pass out some documentation here real soon, but how this organization formed into the contractor that can only do this work. And so since they're the only ones, I think it's appropriate to go ahead and leave that in there. And it's still, the CS still allows for any other organizations that can wiggle their way into mining data from civilians and get in there. It still gives that option.
Ms. Gilardi or Mr. Magdens, any comments on committee discussion?
Reed Magdan, staff to chair, Christ Tompkins. As Ms. Gilardi said, legal believes this language is unnecessary. Unnecessary in terms of they believe without the, if we adopt the amendment, the section that we're dealing with is going to have the same effect, whether or not we adopt the amendment. I understand if committee members feel more comfortable with the specific mention of AMVA being in there. I understand that may be something that committee members would like to have, but I would leave it at your discretion.
Representative Knopp.
And I appreciate them comments, and I think that's exactly where I'm at personally. It's that extra level of assurance that we keep this documentation in-house managed by our division, and it's just that language in there just simply enforces that. So.
Ms. Rydell, would you like the opportunity to comment on amendment number 2? That's a negative head shake. Any further questions or comments on amendment number 2 from committee members?
I would just...
Representative Birch.
I mean, I understand... thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that there is a legal recommendation, but I think the testimony and the commentary is that it's basically neutral, that it's just a clarification and that it doesn't really have a significant impact either way. And thank you.
Is the objection... Representative Ledoux?
I mean, I guess I'm reading it to include that if you give it to AMVA, that you can't convey this stuff. I think I'm reading it to be to exclude AMVA from the places that it can go. But maybe my interpretation is just wrong.
Representative Birch.
I'm an engineer, not a wordsmith, but I see it says the department conveys, distributes, or communicates data to be used in a database or any other system managed by an entity other than the department, to include AMVA, which is something other than the department, then the department may not convey, distribute, or communicate image of faces. So I think Representative from East Anchorage is correct. I think I think it does not include it does not include the conveyance of faces, documents, or images of signatures to AMFA. Is that? I think that's correct, right? Your point, yeah.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not a lawyer. It seems it's like a reassurance. It's sort of make people feel better that any entity other than the department, including AMFA, which is an entity other than the department. I mean, you could list the Girl Scouts of America as well if you wanted to, or anything other than the department, to make the extra sure, 110%, that it's not going to AMFA or anyone other than AMFA. I'm sorry, including AMFA. So it's not going anywhere, including AMFA. Just a reassurance. It seems redundant language, but if it makes people feel better. But now that the Representative Ledoux brought up, you know, this sort of questionable interpretation, that's probably even more reason to get rid of the language.
Well, we do have an attorney online, so maybe we can consult him. Mr. Singer of the Department of Law, if you can hear us, can you speak to this question of the degree to which this additional language and this additional specification plays any utility?
I guess, for the record, Michael Stanker with the Department of Law, through the chair, representative. My interpretation of Section 4, subsection C, is that if the department conveys data to an entity in order to comply with the Real ID Act, it then cannot convey images of faces, images of documents, or images of signatures. That's my interpretation of that subsection C. Whether you include AMVA or not, I believe that's a stylistic a drafting concern from legislative legal. The Department of Law doesn't have an opinion on whether it's included or not included, if that answers the question.
Well, Representative Tuck.
So we heard that you guys were the ones that wanted to remove that. Is that not so?
That is from legislative legal. So their recommendation is this is redundant. It doesn't serve
but who do we have? Utility. We have Department of Law, not Ledge Legal?
We have Department of Law.
Oh, do we have Ledge Legal available?
They're not
those
online.
Those are the ones that drafted this.
They're not online.
Okay. We should probably, if we can, get them, because they're the ones that drafted the original language and the amendment. Is that correct?
But they draft every amendment, yes.
Yeah. So we should probably hear from them.
Okay. Representative Ledoux, do you have further questions about your on this legal question or whether there are legal implications to the inclusion of AMFA?
I think I'd probably take it out, but if you're going to have AMFA in, I'd probably put AMFA after entity, managed by an entity, comma, including AMFA, comma, other than the department. But I think I'm leaning towards just taking it out.
Representative Knopp, a final comment, and then maybe we can move to action.
I just want to make one attempt, Mr. Chair, at seeing if I can help Representative Ledoux. If you look under page 4, line 11, read that first line. It says prohibition on data sharing. It says the department may not. And then if you jump right down to line 16 in the B, it says the department may convey, distribute, or communicate the data except as restricted in section C, in C of this section is what it says. And though C of that section defines what cannot be shared. And so if you read it in its entirety, it says exactly what it's intended to do. It says what we cannot, and that language is part of that inclusion, is an organization that we cannot share. And that's what C does. So you kind of have to read the whole thing in its context. But I think it does exactly what it was intended to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps, but thank you.
Yeah, it does, actually.
Clarification is brought. Is the objection still maintained, Representative Knopp? Martha, could you please call the roll on adoption of amendment number 2J.2?
Representative Knopp?
No.
Representative Wall?
I'm sorry, what to maintain the amendment or to object to the amendment.
The motion is to adopt amendment number two.
Yes.
You want to delete it, right?
No, I do not want to delete it. I want the language to remain. So okay. I want to oppose the objection.
Let's scratch the vote and I'll restate the motion. So the motion is to adopt amendment number two, and as you can see in the amendment in front of you, amendment number two deletes the specific mention of AMVA. So it's kind of a double negative, if you will. On the motion to adopt amendment number two, as objected to by Representative Knopp, Martha, would you please read the roll?
Representative Knopp.
No.
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Representative Kopp, not present. Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Birch?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Kopp?
No.
Representative Jefferson, not present. Chair Christ Tompkins?
Yes.
Two yea, five nay.
The motion to adopt amendment number two fails by a vote of two yeas, five nays. And that takes us to amendment number four. Again, for reference, amendment number three, which relates to the fees for a compliant ID, was adopted on Thursday. Representative Ledoux, a motion.
Yeah, I move amendment number four.
Amendment number four is moved. I will object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Gilardi.
Stephanie Gilardi, staff to Rep. Chris Tompkins. Amendment number four deletes an erroneous mention to an identification card in a section that is only focused on driver's licenses and inserts the words driver's license in its place.
Any questions from the committee on amendment number four? Representative Tuck.
I heard what she said, but I'm not sure I understand the difference between identification card and driver's license, except for one allows you to drive, permissive to drive. The other one, I think they both have same information. I'm not sure what the amendment does.
Reed Magdan, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. Maybe Representative Birch has it.
Let me read the section real quick before we
permission to dialogue.
Well, Representative Tuck, go ahead and read the section.
Okay, thank you. Well, you guys can continue on. You don't have to wait for me.
Okay. If you're reading the section, Representative Wall.
I have a question while this is being while people are reading. And I know right now the state issues driver's licenses and they issue ID cards for non-driving ability, but just as a state ID card. So I'm assuming in this real ID program, you can get a real ID driver's license or you can get a real ID, simply ID card. So it sort of takes both those IDs and ramps them both up to the real ID status, whether you drive with it or it's just used to get on a plane. Obviously, you don't need to drive to get on a plane, so I'm sort of answering my own question. But so just like there's ID cards and driver's licenses that are non-compliant, there'll be ID cards and driver's licenses that are compliant. Is that correct? And I'm getting nods of yes. So okay.
Okay. Affirmative nods. Representative Ledoux.
So I believe there is another section somewhere in the bowels of this bill that must talk about destroying, et cetera, all of the information with respect to the renewal of an identification card, too. Is that just in a different section?
Mr. Magdans?
Yes, Reed Magdans, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux and Representative Tuck, I think what we're looking at is essentially identification cards are in one title of statute, Title 18. Driver's licenses are in another title of statute, Title 28. So the way this bill is drafted, in order to provide the option for a real ID compliant identification card and a real ID compliant driver's license, we have to amend two separate titles, which means much of this language appears twice in this bill, once in the identification card title, once in the driver's license title. Amendment number 4 is addressing a drafting error where the word identification card was used in the title dealing with driver's licenses.
In other words, is it fair to say this is a sort of conforming amendment to bring the language within a certain title consistent with what that title is about?
Chair Christ-Tompkins, that's correct. In the current CS version J, there's a mention of identification cards in Title 28, which deals with driver's licenses.
Representative Ledoux, do you still have a question?
Okay, so it's not exactly a question, but I believe that the portion of the bill which is the twin that that goes to identification cards is page 2, line 12.
I believe that's right, Representative Ledoux. Further questions or comments on amendment number 4 from the committee? And Ms. Rydell, any comment on amendment number 4? A negative head shake? Seeing no further comments or questions from the committee, I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number 4. Is there any further objection from the committee on the motion to adopt amendment number 4? Seeing none, amendment number 4, work order J.6, is adopted by the committee. So this concludes the three technical amendments or non-substantive amendments from this morning. I want to speak to process and then also give the opportunity to the Department of Public Safety to comment on an issue relating to image retention, which came up on Thursday, and sort of further comment and more expert comment would be beneficial. But I first want to talk on process. We had a productive conversation yesterday with Mr. Stanker and Ms. Rydell, which were generous of their time and sort of review of the CS. And there will be further technical amendments coming out of that, which we are going to wrap up into a CS for ease of, I think, sort of less committee time. And so we will submit that CS drafting request after this meeting today. And what my thinking right now is that when we get that CS, we'll distribute it to members, put it on basis, and distribute it to the administration for everyone's review. And then hopefully that CS will come in sometime tomorrow. Who really knows? And then perhaps on Monday, or if there's not enough time to review the CS on Monday, on Tuesday, resume consideration of House Bill 74, any amendments that members would like to see on House Bill 74 from that CS with technical revisions they can draft, and we will consider all final amendments and take action on the bill at that time. So that's the sort of present thinking on the process going forward for House Bill 74.
And if I may, who's going to be the drafter on that?
That'll be our office, and we've been working with the Department of Administration and other interested parties.
And with Ledge Legal, who's going to be the...
Hillary Martin is the drafting attorney.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. And Hillary Martin has been the drafting attorney for prior CSs and all amendments so far. So we'll keep working with the same team. Representative Ledoux.
And it would probably be helpful to make sure that Ms. Martin is at the meeting where we discuss both the CS and any meeting where we're trying to finally take the bill out of committee.
I think that's a great suggestion. And
yeah, especially since, you know, if they're making recommendations, they should speak to their own recommendation changes to their own stuff that they've been writing. So I just want to make sure it was all the same person. If it is, then we should have them available.
I think that's a very fair comment. We'll make sure that happens. Representative Birch, a comment or question on process?
Well, between now and the next time we consider this, we've had some commentary that relates to whether or not, in fact, the TSA will require a real ID card. I mean, I think we've heard, I'm convinced they will, based on testimony, but due to concerns being voiced by others on whether or not that's a fact, Jack, I think then we probably need to take a real close look at what, and I'm not sure how you do that. I don't know if you can confer with somebody from Homeland Security, but it might be helpful between now and then if somehow or another we can get it. It's an absolutely that you can't get on with your Costco card anymore after a date certain. And I've had similar situations where I've been apprised that people can, you know, basically fly international without a passport or a driver's license. So I think it would be useful to understand if in fact that's you know, the case.
Noted, and perhaps we can get some written testimony, and I can confer with Mr. Lardy and Mr. Magdans and see what we can do to speak to that, as well as have resources available when we convene to sort of bring clarity to that. At this time, I do want to bring the Department of Public Safety up, and Captain Dan Loudon with Alaska State Troopers is online right now, and there's questions about image retention and what the current version of the bill, the CS version J, says about image retention and how that interacts with Department of Public Safety's public safety needs. So, Mr. Loudon, if you can hear us, could you put yourself on the record and comment on the subject and speak to how Department of Public Safety uses images that DMV has for law enforcement purposes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is Captain Dan Loudon, L-O-W-D-E-N, with the Alaska State Troopers. We use these images in a variety of ways to perform our duties. We use them to create wanted posters. We use them to create missing person flyers. We use them to assist us in identifying deceased persons who don't have any identification with them. We use them to create photo lineups where we are searching for or trying to identify a suspect and to see if the witness can pick that person out of a group of photographs. We use these photographs in the field, actually, with all the technology that's come along. Back in my day, if you were pulled over and you didn't have your driver's license with us, it was very hard for us sometimes to verify who you were. And so nowadays, the troopers are able to get enough information from the person, their name and birth date. We run them in the computer and pull up that information that seems to match. We are able to go over to the website that has these photographs stored on them, find that photograph, the dispatcher is allowed to do that, and then send that to the phone for the trooper who's alongside the roadway, and they're able to see that that is in fact the person. So very helpful for them. Might actually save them a ticket sometimes for not having their license with them. Another concern we have in not having these photographs and having the backup documentation, it has to do with records. I don't know if this is the right word, but reconciliation. Many times the Criminal Records Bureau has possibility of persons who are have more than one record, and they need these photographs. They need the backup documentation to look at while they're trying to decide whether people with similar names are in fact the same person or they are two different persons. The other area that we see potential for problems is in identity theft. If you lose your license or your ID card or it is stolen and there's no record left behind it, someone could alter that document, the driver's license or ID, put their photograph on it, and because we no longer have a copy of the photograph, we won't be able to establish that. And a person identity theft is growing at an alarming rate, and my understanding is that recovery from that is extremely difficult. And so if a person has their identity stolen and these documents aren't maintained, it's going to be very, very hard for that person to establish that the person who stole their identity and put that person's picture on the ID card did that, in fact. And I think that'll just make it extremely difficult for the citizens of Alaska.
Thank you, Captain Loudon. And I'm going to toggle to Marla Thompson at DMV to speak to sort of standard practice for image retention right now, as law allows and as practice dictates in Alaska, and how the CS differs. So Ms. Thompson, if you can hear us, can you put yourself on the record and speak to how the differentiation between current practice and current law and what the CS speaks to?
Hi, I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, great. This is Marla Thompson, and I am the director of the DMV. So just a little bit about current practices. We've been keeping photos in our current system since around 2005, because remember, before that, we didn't always have the great cameras and the different things that are available now. So it's a growing. We have to keep that currently for 15 years, and so we haven't even hit the threshold of that records retention. I can tell you that we are very concerned about records retention, making sure that everything is secure, and we have policies and procedures that we shred everything. We have shredder companies come in, do it on site, so we watch everything. Nothing gets out from our eyesight, because we're very, very concerned, as should everybody. Does that help a little bit?
That does. And did I hear, did you say right now, I mean, documents have been retained since 2005, since the sort of the ushering in of current technology. What is practice and what is current law in terms of how long those images are retained?
So there are some differences. Photos are a little bit different, because those are retained with the actual record. And then there's actual paper, the documentation of your application and any documents that you had to support who you said you were. And we've had microfiche, microfilm, and now we have electronic scans. So that's how we keep that data. The actual photos kept with the actual record, and Michael Sinker can keep me honest, but right now we have records set at 15 years for that data.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been contacted by a number of folks that have voiced concerns about the capacity or the capability of the whatever you're using to take a photograph. I don't remember it being anything real unique personally in my personal experience. But could you speak to maybe how big an image? I mean, is it like a 1 megabyte picture? Is it a 10 megabyte picture? Is it do you have to take your glasses off when you have your photo taken? What are some of the requirements that relate to the photo? And more specifically, is there anything exotic going on as far as the image capture, or is it just kind of a plain vanilla photograph like so many of us are used to? To the chair.
Through the chair, there's nothing dramatic about it. It's actually, in my opinion, when you look at the camera that takes the photo today, it even looks kind of 1980s. It's a very big camera. It has a flash. We have some, specific instructions. You can wear glasses if you wear glasses, if that's your restriction and you have glasses. It's just a regular photo. I'll have to look up the actual photo size, as things change and get better. But it's just it's a camera against a blue screen, and we take your photo.
Yep.
Okay. That's kind of the way I remember it, but thank you.
Thank you, Representative Birch. That's helpful. I wanted to make sure that we got those perspectives on the record from Department of Public Safety and DMV. Representative Ledoux, is a question for Ms. Thompson or Captain Loudon?
So when this new act is going into effect, assuming that it is going to go into effect, is the photo that they're going to take similar to what you end up with now at some of the major international airports like Heathrow? There's some sort of scan that they take when you go from one section of the airport to the other.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know. I can't speak to that. I could just tell you that there's two types of photos that are required. You can either use the same one or you can do two. But when you come in with the application, it can be a very low-tech webcam, and you're just making sure that you know who tried to get a real ID. It's just an application and a photo to match with that. And then you can still continue to use the same photos at the end of the process. So once I've gone through, checked all their data, done all the information in the computer, and then we take their photo at the end. So that's the same process. So somewhere in there we have to fit in a procedure to take the application photo.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. And this time I want to move to Mr. Brian Duffy of the Department of Military Veterans Affairs to address one other question that came up in the last hearing on Thursday, and that is the question of whether a temporary real ID or a temporary ID card can be used to get on base. And I think specifically the question that came up was if you go to DMV and you get a real ID compliant ID, your driver's license, and you're waiting for it to come in the mail, the temporary ID that you receive, whether that will get you on base in the interim. I think I phrased that question correctly. Mr. Duffy, if you heard the question, could you put yourself on the record and speak to that question?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Brian Duffy. I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And so I think there's two parts to this. I think for one-time access, my sense is the installations would accept that. However, for recurring access, i.e., to be able to get a defense biometrics identification card for, let's say, a one-year term, my sense is a temporary ID would be insufficient. Over.
Representative Ledoux, follow-up?
So one would be able to go on base, you know, if it takes 10 days to get the actual card and they've given you a temporary card, would you be able to go on base for that week to 10 days?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think for one-time access, i.e. one entry, one exit, the temporary card would be sufficient. Beyond that, the individual would need to obtain a defense biometrics identification card for which the installations are now requiring real ID compliant forms of ID. Over.
Follow up?
So in other words, if somebody has a job with the school district, with one of the construction firms, etc., and they are in the process of getting their real ID card and they're trying to work for that 10 days or so until they get their real, the actual card. You don't, the base would only let them go on once, regardless of whether they had employment, which was, you know, a week to indefinitely. There'd only be one time that the base would allow them on with this temporary card. Is that what I'm hearing?
So through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you know, I'll certainly be happy to circle back with the JBRA leaders. Again, to get that longer-term access card, that dispensed biometrics identification system card, which does not then require the individual to have any other form of identification other than that, to get that in their hand, after June 6th, the installations will require a Real ID compliant form of ID.
And I think, Ms. Rydell, you may have comment on this question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Leslie Rydell, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration. One thing I wanted to say is that for people who work on base all the time, and Brian Duffy can correct me, they can get a card that lasts for a year, so they get that with their Real ID. And when if their Real ID is expiring, they can come in before it expires, and keep their current ID while they're waiting for their next one to return. With a passport, the difference there is, my recollection is that you have to mail in your passport, so you actually don't have, if you're just relying on a passport, you would actually be 6 to 8 weeks without any ID. So that's why the passport is different than the ID here. When you come in to get, or online, go to renew, you still could have your old driver's license until your new one arrives. Does that help fill that gap?
No, actually it doesn't. Sorry, okay. Because I was under the impression that one of the reasons for doing this is so that you've got somebody, they've maybe got a new job, they don't have this, and this is at the beginning, they don't have this Real ID card, that to get a passport is going to take maybe a minimum of 10 days or so, and they'd be able to just go down that day to the driver's license place and get their Real ID card. And it sounds like if they have a job that only lasts one day on the base, this would be just fine. But if they have a job that lasts more than one day, as, you know, hopefully it would be more than one day, that other than the one day, after day one, they'd have to sit around and wait for this card to come in the mail.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, one part I left out was if we pass this bill, we will have a waiver for 2 years at least while we're trying to implement the bill, so people will have time. You wouldn't need the passport starting June 6th if we pass this bill. So you would have a waiver and you'd be able to get on with your regular driver's license at that time until you could go get a Real ID.
But,
or a passport.
But,
final comment, Representative.
But that assumes that, you know, I mean, people have kind of known that this is coming for a while, and they, assuming that there are a lot of people who didn't get the passports before. So I don't really necessarily think that if we extend it for a couple of years that there are going to be people who, I mean, people have this tendency to wait until a deadline. And so I thought that one of the benefits of the Real ID was that you'd still be able to get on the base, whether this is now or whether it is 2 years from now, and you'd be able to take care of those things, like, right away. And that's not what it's sounding like to me.
Through the chair, now it'll take us at least a year to get up and running. To get everything going, so to get the actual, to be able to produce the card, and so that's what the waiver is for. That's always been the case.
Representative Wohl, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as far as the temporary goes, and you know, obvious if this bill passes and we get the 2 year extension, I guess in 2020 is when everything sort of kicks in, and you need the ID to get on the Real ID to get on an airplane or to get on a military facility. And I guess what Representative Ledoux is asking is, if I wait till the very last day, or I'm out in the bush for 2.5 years and I come to town and I want to fly home to see my, or fly out of state, can I go to the DMV, get a temporary, and is that as real as a Real ID? Is that Real ID compliant? And Mr. Duffy said, well, to get on base, you have to have a Real ID compliant, and you can get a BIOS card or biometric something. But that's not what her question was. Her question is, will a temporary Real ID be as compliant as a permanent real ID in that 10-day or 2-week interim while you're waiting for your real ID? Can I get on an airplane, which is another important question, because if all of a sudden you want to fly out the next day and you don't have your ID because you've been living in Hoonah for 3 years and you haven't come to town. So then you come to town, you go, oh, my gosh, I need a real ID. So you go to the DMV, you get a temporary, but your flight is the next morning. Can you get on that plane? And those are valid questions.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I think what Brian Duffy was saying is for the one time getting on base that the paper would work, yes. So hopefully that the person who's been working on base is not,
right,
you know, not aware.
Quick follow-up.
Were you going to...
So the person who works on base, my understanding is that they can get a card that lasts a year. That's where the person who comes and goes all the time.
Representative Wall.
I agreed. If you work on post all the time, you can get a different kind of ID card, a BIOS card, or I believe it's something like that. But if you have a real ID card, the real deal... You should be able to do that as well and get on post. You might have to stop and, you know, fill out a form every time if you're not a permanent employee on the post. But you know, and maybe we should talk to base commanders. And I don't know. And I don't know where Mr. Duffy has talked to all the base commanders in the state, whether they will accept the temporary real ID while waiting for the real ID.
I maybe bring that back to Mr. Duffy. I mean, I thought what I heard Mr. Duffy say is he'll get back to us. But Mr. Duffy, I want to confirm it, that whether you sort of do or do not know the answer to this question, whether a temporary ID will get you past a federal checkpoint while in this interim period that Representative Wool and Representative Ledoux described, you might be waiting for your real deal, real ID compliant ID to come in the mail. Mr. Duffy?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Brian Duffy, Admin Services Director, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'll be glad to check with installation leaders to confirm whether a temporary identification card will be sufficient in that interim period and then report back.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Duffy, when you find that answer, if you could email me and committee staff and we can distribute that to everyone on the committee as soon as we get the answer, that would be appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Duffy, will do. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Representative Ledoux.
Well, I'm not sure who to ask this question to now. But, so, we think that at a certain date, which, that we're going to have to use real IDs in order to fly. There seems to be perhaps some dispute about that, but assuming that that's true. And then Ms. Rydell is telling us that we can get a waiver if we pass this bill. But what happens when you fly someplace and in the airport in Alaska, everything is good? Because Alaska has an exemption, but then you've flown to some other place, and maybe that other place, the state that you're in, doesn't have an exemption or doesn't have a waiver. So how do you get back on the plane to go to Alaska if, in fact, you are going to need a real ID compliant identification card to fly? So I'm not sure who that question goes to.
I want to see if I can attempt to answer that question, and then Ms. Rydell can tell me if I'm right or wrong, because I'm curious whether my understanding is accurate. I mean, right now, if you go to any airport, including Juneau Airport, there's a little sign outside TSA that says if you have a driver's license from the following states at such and such time, you won't be able to get through TSA with that driver's license. Or open question exactly, you know, what the hard requirements are, but certainly at the sort of easiest level of getting through TSA, those licenses will not suffice. But because federal standards are universal across the United States, doesn't matter what state you're in, if Alaska gets that waiver, Alaska driver's licenses won't appear on that list of non-acceptable IDs at airports, whether you're in Montana, Michigan, or Alaska. But, Ms. Riedel, am I way off base?
Through the chair, this is Leslie Riedel, Department of Administration. You're correct.
Okay.
I've never seen that at the airport.
Well, who knows when we'll be going anywhere, but next time you get on, I think I've seen them at Juneau Airport. But Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, I saw that I was looking at the Real ID Act of 2005 where it talks about grants to states. Have we received any monies from the federal government to implement the Real ID or to upgrade our equipment or to do anything under those grants?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. Actually, I would ask Marla Thompson to answer that if she could. Thanks.
Ms. Thompson, if you heard the question, could you speak to Representative Johnson's inquiry?
Hi, this is Marla Thompson. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. There were grants, but I don't know if they were real. Those weren't Real ID grants. But back when they put in the compliance printers to print the driver's license and the IDs, not at the DMV. We had two grants, one from FMCSA and one from FEMA at that time to pay for that work. I can find out if there's any other grants.
And Ms. Thompson, if you do more diligence, I think similar to Mr. Duffy, if you could respond in writing and we can distribute that to members when we get that from you, that might be the best path forward. A follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, I would appreciate getting a full listing of. I mean, looking at the Real ID Act, it says that Secretary may grant to a state the extension of time. Well, let's see. Hang on just a second. That's not the one. There is the grants to states. Excuse me. Authorization of appropriations. There's authorized to be appropriated to the Secretary for each of the fiscal years 2005 through 2009. Such sums as may be necessary to carry out this title. So if we could get a written list of all the monies that were received for implementation, that would be good information to have, and I'd like to get that.
Ms. Thompson, go ahead if you have any comment.
I can make that request and get that information in writing to you.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. I think we have a process in front of us, so I don't want to carry this hearing on too long, but I do want to sort of inventory the questions that I at least scribbled down, and I know committee staff may have grabbed others. But so there will be a CS drafting request that will go in to fix revisions that DOA has cited that through our vetting are sort of non-objectionable on you know, privacy grounds and sort of mainstream, if you will. When we get that CS, we'll distribute it to all members, the administration, and put on basis. And then probably a day's time after that, we'll resume this meeting, whether that is Monday or Tuesday. We'll see how quickly the drafters work, at which time we'll take any remaining amendments that members may have drafted after seeing the CS and take action on the bill. But I do want to cite the questions that ideally we'll have answers to. One is the question that Representative Wohl and Representative Ledoux cited about what happens in this interim period if you're waiting on a Real ID Act compliant ID to come in the mail, what temporary identification will do as far as getting you through federal checkpoints. Another question about TSA and what will or will not get you through TSA and maybe what the different levels are of getting you through TSA. That's been an open question, and hopefully we can get perspective from the administration and or Mr. Hasbrook and sort of see how all that sorts out. And, of course, we'll have Hillary Martin from Ledge Legal online as well. I do want to conclude this meeting, but if anyone else has questions that they feel are burning that should be addressed in the interim before we go to our final meeting on House Bill 74, or that's the aspiration, now would be the time to put them on the record. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the Department of Public Safety. It's not particularly related to Real ID. It's more about the use of the photograph. So I don't want to go off on a tangent. It's just something that occurred to me during Captain Loudon's testimony. And it was just something my own interest, but it's not necessarily pertinent to Real ID. It's more about how he was using photos. So.
And I wonder, Mr. Wolf, if maybe the best form for that might be offline, and we can connect you with Mr. Loudon. Representative Tuck.
I think, Mr. Chair, then also when you do your questions to Homeland Security regarding the TSA, it's my understanding that all of our airlines are considered common carriers, and a common carrier has a legal duty to transport anyone who is willing to pay the fare. And there is no requirements for ID. So if there's going to be a change in the future, or if there's legislation going to be introduced, but I don't think they can do that just through regulations. So if you can get the clarification on how that would change.
Noted, Rep. Tuck, and I, when Mr. Magdans, Mr. Lardy, and I work on these questions, we'll confer with you to make sure that it's being sort of properly stated and we're capturing the information that we need to get. Representative Knopp, a comment on the question that I just posed.
Yeah, in a sense. So just a statement for Ms. Thomas. So when you provide the information on the grants, I think we're kind of looking for the language that may bind us, so any requirements that the state was obligated to comply with in the terms of that grant, if you provide that as well, that's appreciate that. Then for Leslie Riedel, I would ask two things that have me a little confused, and I don't particularly care if she answers them now. It might be appropriate now, but maybe later. The time for verification of the documents that we're going to submit for Real ID, are we expecting 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks? So it leads to the temporary ID thing. So I'm just kind of wondering how long are we anticipating? And then I don't know why, for some reason I was unfamiliar with the waivers. I thought there was a drop-dead date, and you talked about a two-year waiver yet, and I didn't know there was any options left for that. So I'm a little curious about that.
I think we can allow comment from Department of Administration on that question. The waivers, your question about verifying documents is noted, Representative Knopp. Ms. Riedel, if you could perhaps elaborate on the nature of these waivers and how they work, please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Leslie Riedel. Representative Knopp, the waivers only if we pass a bill. If we don't pass a bill by June, well, I've been in touch with DHS to let them know that our sessions don't always end on a certain date and that we might go past 190 and go into 120. But if we don't pass it during the session, then we will lose our waiver on June 6th. But if we pass it, we will continue on while we're implementing.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
On the subject of waivers, Representative Tuck.
Yeah, so when we're looking at what this bill is, what parts of it are compliant, what parts of it aren't compliant, if we can get the information on what needs to be in the bill to be compliant for the waiver. There should be a list. I'm sure there's a list. I mean, just passing a bill that says, hey, Real ID is probably not enough.
And I can speak briefly to that before. What's been pretty clear to us in our conversations with, I mean, everyone from DOA to DHS, the ACLU, or anyone else, is that sort of compliance, which will determine whether a waiver is granted, is basically determined by whether you are sort of meeting the letter of Department of Homeland Security, both regulations as well as the original authorizing Real ID Act, and that it's sort of a binary, one or zero. If you're meeting the regs and the original authorizing statutes, you're compliant, and DHS, I think, is a pretty sort of rigid perspective on whether you're meeting the regs or the statute. But Ms. Riedel, let me know if that was off base.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're correct.
Okay.
So if we can get that, that'd be great.
Sure. I think that maybe this, we could certainly get all the regs on Real ID as well as the Real ID Act, but I think there's sort of particular hot spots of questions whether, say, a law that we pass will or will not be in compliance. And some of those have been discussed already, but I mean, we could certainly focus in on questions of whether something is or is not compliant. that you might be curious about? Or does that speak to your question?
Well, I just want to know what the list is, because depending on what the list is, I want to just do the bare minimums. I don't want to give last five digits of our Social Security numbers, and that's not part of the act. And so I just want to see what we can do to get the waiver so that we can change things through AMFA that is not a requirement of the act that they're asking for that I think is going too far. So I think that if we're going to meet the requirements of the waiver, let's do the bare minimums to get that waiver. So I would like to know what the requirements of the waiver are. I think that's a fair question to ask.
Sure. I think that's an answer we can come up with, and particularly in regards to Social Security numbers, which I think are probably...
Well, I want to know not just Social Security numbers, what other elements are too, so we can do the bare minimums. Whether it's facial recognition, I don't know what it is, so I don't know. It'd be nice to know so that we can do the bare minimums that's necessary to get the waiver, whether it's Social Security numbers or anything else.
Okay. And I think the holistic answer to that question is really the body of regulations for the Real ID Act as well as the authorizing law, which we have been consulting with and can absolutely share.
Or we can get Homeland Security also to testify also.
Yeah. Potentially. I don't know if Homeland Security will make themselves available to testify, but we can ask, and we will ask. Representative Ledoux, is this a comment on...
It's a comment with respect to Representative Tuck's comments. I mean, I'd be sort of surprised if there isn't some, you know, at least a memo out there from the U.S. Department of Justice outlining exactly what is necessary to comply with the Real ID Act. Sort of like, you know, with respect to marijuana legalization, everybody would, or the state legalization of marijuana, there's this Cole memorandum floating around in which the U.S. The Attorney General said, you know, the various things that the Justice Department would look at to determine whether they were going to enforce federal law with respect to marijuana. So isn't there something like that with respect to the Real ID?
To my knowledge, it's primarily assessed or adjudicated on a case-by-case or state-by-state basis, and sort of states authorizing legislation is adjudicated whether it is or is not compliant. But I might ask Mike Stinker if there's sort of more authoritative memos from the Department of Justice or Department of Homeland Security about sort of specifying whether what constitutes the bare minimum of compliance and what does not.
Or when you say adjudication, that suggests that there is a legal case that might be floating out somewhere as to whether a state is compliant or not compliant.
Yeah, it's a good question. Representative Ledoux, Mr. Stinker, to this question of whether there is sort of authoritative interpretation from the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, as far as sort of what the hard and bare minimum of compliance is. Is there any document out there that speaks to that?
For the record, Michael Stanker, Department of Law. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm not aware of any such adjudicatory documents regarding minimum compliance. Minimum compliance with the Real ID Act is spelled out in 6 CFR Part 37. That's the body of regulations implementing the Act. It's my opinion, having read those regulations many times, is that there isn't, they don't create a floor and a ceiling. They create a standard. And if we wish to issue compliant driver's license and IDs, we have to comply with that standard. So there isn't a, you can go route A or you can go route B. That isn't how the regulations are set up.
Thank you. At this time, I will recess to the chair, and again, noting, I think sort of the timeline going forward is going to be dictated by the drafting turnaround time on the CS. I'll keep all members apprised, as well as the administration, and as we may be having an increased regularity of floor sessions, we'll also be sure to announce sort of updates regarding committee hearings at that time, too, under committee announcements and four sessions. Representative Birch, a question.
It was suggested to me that we may want to check with, you know, maybe the Army, the Air Force, as their documentation requirements might differ from some of the bases. I'm just, you know, from the, you know, just to make sure we've got an inclusive request out there.
I'll flag that for Mr. Duffy, who I'm sure is listening, as it sounds like he's got he's going to be tracking down a few answers to questions that came up. But thank you, Representative Birch. So at this time, I will again recess to the call of the chair and keep members and others apprised in the manner I just described. We are recessed.